We're talking about Love Story, a very tender novel, which I think took everybody by surprise when it roared onto the bestseller list and stayed there. The book is published by Harper & Row, written by Eric Siegel, and we'll be back with Eric in just a moment.
This is BookBeat, each week introducing you to leading authors and critics. This program is made possible in part by the National Book Committee and the American Booksellers Association. Your host is Robert Cromie, daily columnist for the Chicago Tribune and a contributing editor to Book World, the Sunday literary supplement of the Chicago Tribune and the Washington Post.
Eric, did the way in which Love Story caught on surprise you, as I'm sure it did everyone else?
Yes, it really did, because, every writer dreams of some sort of success, instant success, too, if you have big dreams, the way I had big dreams, which have all been more than fulfilled with Love Story's reception. But when I wrote this little book, I was hesitant even to show it to publishers, because it is in its way so old-fashioned, so unsophisticated, so chaste. And it's a love story, but it has none of the bedroom scenes that are de rigueur for bestsellerdom, after all.
It's a few four-letter words, but
yeah, but that four-letter words don't sell books. Yeah. I mean, the bestseller list is populated with the sensationalistic type sex novel.
Well, the sales of books about Plautus, for example, hadn't prepared you for Love Story.
No, I'd written a few books prior to Love Story, non-fiction, of course. And I think the biggest seller was my book on Roman comedy for the Harvard University Press, Roman Laughter, about Plautus. And that sold some 2,300 copies.
Well, you are, of course, a professor of classics and comparative literature at Yale, a former... I don't know if you were a track star, but you were a track man at Harvard.
I appreciate that. In retrospect, 10 years, we can call me a star, but I was really more like a starlet.
Were you cross country?
Yeah, ran cross country.
Well, now you did the movie script for the Beatles' Yellow Submarine. But what brought Love Story to mind? How did you happen to do this?
Well, being primarily a college professor, I keep close contact with my students, and I'm happy to say they come back and visit me. And this was Christmas time or Thanksgiving time of 2 years ago, and some students who had been out about 5 years came back to visit me, and they told me a story of someone I didn't know in person, but he was a graduate of Yale of some 5 years back, and he had married right after graduation, and his wife had worked him through graduate school. I don't know the precise details, but just after he got his graduate degree, and she was ready to stop working and start having babies, etc., and the scrounging was over, she died. And this, it's death is common in a way, not only in literature but in life. But this sort of young, tragic death, it's just the situation of that young man. It's usually the young widow we read about, but this was a widower, and the situation of this young man struck me, and that. There was the genesis of Love Story, at least the sadness of a young man who loses his young wife. And hence, Love Story begins with, what can you say about a 25-year-old girl who died? I then took it as an opportunity to describe true love, if in fact true love can be described, and I tried anyway.
Well, of course you have a Back Bay Oliver Barrett, the what?
Fourth.
Falling in love with the daughter of a little Italian baker from New Jersey. I guess you could call it a love story, yes.
An old-fashioned at that.
But I thought first novels were supposed to be autobiographical. Now, you must have modeled the girl on somebody you knew.
Yes, that's quite true. I did. It was not, happily enough, a girl who died. It was a wonderful girl who was and still is a wonderful girl, and witty and clever, and uses the language just that Jenny uses in the book, and was a wonderful person. And of course, writers, whether first novel or tenth novel, have to draw on some sort of experience, which I think they should refract rather than reflect. I don't think you should tell tales about your friends in books. unless it's straight autobiography, but they should refract their experience and use it to make live characters. And I'd like to think that Jenny and Oliver in Love Story are live and real.
Well, have you been kind enough at least to write the girl on whom Jenny is based to say, you are the original of Love Story?
It's so embarrassing.
No, but the point is she must be running around her neighborhood saying, I am the girl in Love Story, and people won't believe her unless she can produce this letter. It's your duty to write a letter.
Is it? You know, I've been chicken. I confess, we've still maintained our friendship, this girl and I, and when Love Story, as you said, rocketed right onto the bestseller list, it started at number 8 almost immediately after publication, she was the first to call me up and say, congratulations, my husband and I read your book, and we're so happy for you, et cetera, et cetera. Pause. And it's so obviously she. And I was so embarrassed to tell her that it was she. I mean, not, I had already told her by writing the book, of course. And she didn't want to stick her neck out and say, hey, what, is that supposed to be me? And there it hung for some minutes. And she said, do come by for dinner sometime. And I said, yeah. And I hung up and I was ashamed of myself, because I didn't have the courage to say right out to this girl whose wonderful character had, you know, it's not a literary creation of mine, really, as much as her soul really transformed onto chapters that made Love Story a success. And I didn't have the guts to tell her. And I swore that when, or if, Love Story ever became number 1 on the bestseller list, I would then call her. It would be a new excuse to dial a phone and say, it's you, thank you. Love Story became number 1. It's been number 1 for many weeks, and I still haven't got the guts to call and say. It's very, very embarrassing.
Where does she live?
Where did she live?
Where does she live now? What town, I mean? I'm trying to help you.
No. No, I mean, it's not, as well you know, that there's nothing embarrassing in the least about,
well, of course not.
About
no,
the girl's character.
I mean,
she should be flattered, but it is kind of, you know, when you write a love story that becomes sort of a cult love story the way this has become, and sort of accepted as this is where love is at in 1970, and Jenny knows all about love.
Well, if she's not smart enough to figure out that she's the original,
that's right,
forget her.
Exactly.
Well, what sort of mail have you had from young readers especially?
Well, that's the surprising thing, is the fact that I've gotten mail from young readers at all, in as much as Love Story is still in hardback, and one imagines that it's the young people who wait for the paperback to buy it, etc. And I've always believed, although it wasn't done intentionally, that young people would read fiction if it was something that were related to them in some way. And the majority of letters I've received from young people, and they now come into the thousands, and I've been unable to send more than a form, thank you, is, it's true. That's what they say again and again, it's true. And they write, I made my grandmother read it, and now she understands us a lot better.
Isn't that nice? It's a pleasant thing to
have
happen.
It's a great feeling. It's a great feeling.
You know, one of the things I didn't realize until we were chatting before the show was that you were doing the movie version at the same time you were finishing the book.
Yeah.
The movie was finished when the book came out, the same day the book came out.
In fact, whenever I got in trouble, I wrote them absolutely simultaneously. I had, as you mentioned earlier, some experience writing movies. I had, by the time I started Love Story, 2 or 3 movies under my belt, the first of which was The Yellow Submarine. So I had a little bit of expertise as far as writing a script was concerned, and I felt confident. I was so, overwhelmed by the human situation I described earlier, hearing about the young man who had lost his wife, B, all of a sudden captured in my mind by the two characters, Oliver and Jenny, I didn't want to lose them while I learned how to write a novel. So that I quickly dashed to the typewriter, wrote out the dialogue scenes, which could be either movie or book, and whenever I had plot to get through, did it first in screenplay form. And then sat down after all was on paper, and I felt I wouldn't lose. In other words, I wouldn't lose Oliver and Jenny. They wouldn't disappear, and I'd have a book half finished and characters who had ceased to speak. I then sat down to find a style in which to write the novel. And I must say, I wrote the first chapter 28 times till I got it in a style that I thought it should be, that a novel, in fact, should be in 1970. And I don't think I did the screenplay more than twice.
Well, You know, one of the funny things about it, I think, is that some of the reviewers have been very outspoken and very hostile to the book. And the only reason I can figure out is that they are annoyed because it isn't the great American novel. This seems to be the complaint. This isn't great literature. Well, I don't suppose we're trying to write great literature. You were trying to write a good book, a book which people would like to read, and a book which said something.
I recall precisely, if we may say, it's fit to print, so it's fit to say. The New York Times was the one whose only quibble with the book was, we can ignore it because it's, after all, not serious literature, but I had a lump in my throat the size of a football, said the reviewer. That's right. The aesthetic, that it has to be important or significant or something like that, or because I am under some obligation because I'm a professor of sorts to write something that will ultimately be taught in classes or something.
I think you were supposed to write something dull because you're a professor.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's sufficient and to make people feel. And I'd say a football in your throat is feeling. and interestingly enough, all ancient theories of literature begin with the prime criterion of touching the beholder, the reader, whether it's Aristotelian catharsis or whatever. It's touching the reader or the spectator. And Love Story, I'm happy to say, has touched some people, and I ask no other aesthetic than that.
Well, it's touched roughly 200,000 people at the moment, I think, or more than that, a little, or a few, possibly. It is the number one bestseller
right
at the moment. Are you working on another novel already?
I'm really... You're supposed to say yes.
No, you don't have to say yes.
No, because I've seen all first novels, and in the book jacket of the first novel, it says he lives in New Haven, Connecticut, that much is true, where he is currently at work on his new novel. That's what he's supposed to say, or she, whoever. But I will be honest with you and tell you that I am so overwhelmed by the reception of Love Story, and I don't mean the success of it all, either financially or seeing my name up in lights or whatever, but by the emotional response of the readers who write to me of their tears, and people of all ages, college students, male and female, that they've cried, etc., can't wait for your next book, that I'm in a little bit of an emotional bind because I don't know what I think I'm supposed to provide them. Must I give another cry? You see, and as long as I'm reading my own reviews,
yeah, don't
now,
let them typecast you, which
right,
you're trying to
right,
do, obviously.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And I can't be self-conscious, which I am now. And I'm reading the reviews of the book that haven't been written yet, and I must look for some kind of honest inspiration, if I can be so pompous as to call it. You know,
well,
some.
I think you should write a very cynical, nasty book, which will upset everybody now. You see, just to establish your independence, then you can go back to something nice and pleasant and inspiring.
Well, see, there I really do feel, because a lot of the letters have said, you know, the affirmation part of Love Story, the despite the fact that it's sad, you know, there's so much affirmation of the goodness of people, the basic goodness of people, that if I came out with something cynical, I think I would be afraid to start my car for fear of the good people's mafia or something, you know, because, you know, I did entertain at least a segment of the population with people you would be happy to invite into your own home, as opposed to...
How do the Italian-Americans like it?
Oh, they love it, you know. I've gotten lots of letters from Italian-Americans who said, roughly, thank you for writing an Italian character that never once says Mamma Mia. In fact, never once uses an Italian word. And thank you for writing an Italian character that doesn't belong to the mafia. Mm. It's really, I'm gratified.
How about mainline Boston? Have you had comparable letters from there?
Interestingly enough, I mean, from every segment of from every character, from the four characters involved, or analogs for these characters. Sure, I've gotten mail from the North Shore, from old Harvard types, from the people whose estate I once passed in Ipswich, looked at it and described it sort of vaguely, and not of course by name, in Love Story, and they said, "Yeah, wow, it's really
they recognized it,
right?"
Well, of course, Love Story, as one of your reviewers was intelligent enough to point out, is a double love story because you do have the relationship between father and son, which is finally resolved at the end, after Jenny leaves, and. The father, I think, is a very good character, a very well-drawn character.
It was the hardest one for me to write. All except for the stylistic revisions, all my rewrites both in the film and in the book, which were done, of course, simultaneously, really revolved around making that father just the right degree of, well, first of all, credibility, and yet distance, and yet how can you prove that a father loves a son when the son is the narrator of the book and he's telling you, the reader, that his father doesn't love him? That was, to me, the biggest artistic problem. I mean, how, through the son's eyes, can we somehow prove that his father really loves him when he is telling you, my father doesn't care about me, my father doesn't this and that and the other?
Well, one of the touching scenes was when Jenny is on the phone talking to the elder, or the older Mr. Barrett, her father-in-law, and Oliver will not come to the phone to talk to his father, and she, of course, gets very annoyed, and she finally says, well, Oliver wants me to tell you he loves you.
And I must tell you a very interesting anecdote about that very scene. That was not in the first draft of my book. And, of course, Paramount rushing to make Love Story while it was still being printed in book form. The book was not yet out when we were about to shoot that scene, or the place in the movie where that scene now is. And there was another scene there instead. And Ally McGraw, who plays Jenny in the movie, called me, childhood friend, wonderful girl, intelligent, not actressy to the extent that she wasn't concerned with her part looking good. But this was the only conference I ever had with her. And she said, please have lunch with me. And she discussed the scene that was there in its place. It was another kind of family argument, but it didn't involve a call to the father and didn't involve that very important aperçu of Jenny's that Oliver loves his father, and she came out and said it. And Ally discussed her qualms about the scene with me, and with her I came up with the scene you just described, including the very line, Mr. Barrett, Oliver wants you to know that in his own special way he loves you very much. And I saw her face light up. She said, that's what the scene needs. And I wrote it, and they filmed it that way, and I sat back. I said, if it's good enough for the movie, it certainly should go into the book. So I called Harper and Row, and I asked them to please stop the presses. And as we remarked earlier, this was the presses on a unknown first novel, 6,000 copies, that who knew? And they said, please, you are not Honoré de Balzac, who could make revisions in galley and in page proof and all that sort of business. You're a humble, they put it to me more discreetly, you're a humble first novelist, and please, why not let well enough alone? I said, no, please, let me rewrite that chapter. And I did. I rewrote the thing in galleys. That's chapter 13. And thanks to the actress in the film, I mean, I really had some help on this novel.
Did you have trouble casting the movie? I mean, to your satisfaction? Because you helped pick the actors, didn't you?
Yeah. The toughest thing was to find a boy to play Oliver. Because that was really the toughest part of Love Story in terms of credibility, which is a hero. He is not an anti-hero. He is a hero. He is an all-American boy. He's a star athlete for Harvard. He is a good guy that he's got, basically, given his distance with his father, there's nothing wrong with this kid. And in this age of anti-heroes, it's awful tough to find a guy that'll make the old square virtues look good. And I'm happy to say that finally, we lucked out and found what will have to be the most brilliant actor, although his name is known to some television viewers, but he's certainly the most brilliant new face that the movies will see next year, and he's Ryan O'Neill. And, of course, I'm so emotional about the part of Oliver, you realize, because having written the book in the first person, I, in my moments of distraction,
Oliver,
think I'm Oliver. But when I see Ryan O'Neill, I know he's Oliver.
What about the father?
Father is Ray Milland.
Oh, he would be very good.
Yeah, right. Yes, and her father's played by John Marley, who's a brilliant character actor who was in Faces. And so, and again, not your Italian stereotype, ho, ho, ho. He looks like a person and not a character actor.
What reaction do you get, incidentally, from your colleagues in the classical world? Do you get raised eyebrows occasionally, or a kind of a secret smile?
No, well, I think they're very, very pleased. Well, I know they're pleased because, first of all, the usual kind of academic novel or novel by a professor is usually to expose what the doggone department chairman did to him and what faculty wives do while their husbands are teaching. That sort of thing. Every college, large or small, has got its own expose novel. Some colleges are lucky or unlucky enough to have many. In other words, that's the typical. When a professor writes a novel, it's what goes on behind the scenes at the university. I think they were pleased to see that I wasn't telling tales on anybody. I think they were also pleased to see that it was something that they could be proud of to a certain extent, because the reviews in large measure were favorable, and favorable to the style as well as the tone and the content. That it was not only optimistic, it was it's something that influenced the trend in terms of bringing you know, the focus of books a little bit higher than the groin, and perhaps even as high as the heart. And so they were pleased, and in fact I got some letters from professors of literature, some even making highly flattering comparisons, which I would blush to repeat.
Go ahead, what were they?
Well, I had a couple.
You may blush if you like.
And Living Color, okay. I got a few letters that compared the end of Love Story to the end of A Farewell to Arms. I mean, this happened, the two comparisons that seem to be made all the time, and of course, I realized that they were not equations, but comparisons. There's a difference, and I'm aware of that. But they were in tone to Salinger. In other words, the sort of the feeling of youth being portrayed, and the atmosphere of the end of A Farewell to Arms.
Didn't you get one letter from a professor of English?
Yes. I got more than one.
Comparing it to A Farewell.
Right. The Sterling professor of classics at Yale wrote me such a letter, in fact.
Well, that's very flattering and to have.
Yeah, indeed, you know, it only serves to make me that much more inhibited as far as putting pen to paper.
So I read somewhere that you run 10 miles a day. Is this true?
Yeah. I must say...
Not when you're on the road like this.
Well, yes. This afternoon, not 10 miles this afternoon, but along Lake Michigan, I did about 4 or 5. I hope this doesn't indicate some kind of decline on my part. I've been steadily eroding. My mileage has been eroded from 10 to 9 to 8 to 7 to 6, and I hope this doesn't...
Is this purely to keep in shape, or do you have an eye on the Olympics, for example?
I have an inner eye. I mean, I have this secret dream that I cherish, that someday I will win an Olympic marathon. It's not going to happen. I do every year participate in the Boston Marathon.
Do you really? What's the best you finished?
Best I finished in the Boston Marathon was in 1964 or 5, and I was 50th out of about 1,000.
That's not bad.
And I ran 2 hours and 56 minutes for the course, which is 26 miles, 385 yards. Since then, my times have been around 257, 258, 259, but, and I tell this on myself this year, with Love Story on the bestseller list, and my attending perhaps too many dinner parties, I ran 3 hours and 19 minutes. And that just is unconscionably slow.
What do you do besides write? I mean, do you have other hobbies besides writing and running? We should be able to do something with about He Who Runs May Read, but I don't know. It'd take too long to work out.
Well, no, actually, you know, that running time, I guess I am a compulsive worker, except that, you know, McLuhan says, where the whole man is involved, there is no work. And there is no work, because I'm always involved. And even when I'm running, though I don't consciously work, it's a kind of great liberation. And ideas come. I wrote the last sentence of Love Story while running. I mean, I can think of lots of lines or situations or moments in films that I've written while running, because, you know, my mind was freer than it was when trapped by a typewriter.
That's a curious thing. Do you have favorite authors, favorite modern authors?
I like Kurt Vonnegut.
Oh, charming guy in person, too.
No, I mean, I don't like, I don't know him.
Haven't you met him?
I mean, I like his books. Oh. No, I haven't met any author. The only author I've met in the flesh is John Hersey, because he, too, is at Yale.
Oh, yes.
And like his work as well, of course. And the most entertaining novel, I don't have a chance to read much, because by the time I finish reading the requisite number of scholarly articles on Ovid or whoever I'm teaching in a given year, this coming year it is Ovid, I'm boning up. There's not much time for fiction, and I really liked The French Lieutenant's Woman this year. I thought that was just great, a virtuoso performance. And I enjoyed immensely The Andromeda Strain.
Oh, Crichton.
By Dr.
Yes.
Crichton, a Harvard man, whom I've never met. But I was enormously impressed by his erudition, that he wore so lightly and saved all for the footnotes in the back. Imagine a novel with footnotes.
publish or perish is a thing that many professors have to do. Is this considered good publishing from in the professorial ranks?
No,
I know
I
you
got
said
it.
I know you said that the professors. Your fellow professors thought it was a fine thing. But I mean, as far as the administration goes.
No, I doubt it. I mean, they wouldn't, you know, at best they wouldn't hold it against me, I think. But, you know, I stand by Roman Laughter, which is, you know.
Which is also published by Harper and Row, isn't it?
No.
Who's that?
No, Roman Laughter is the Harvard University Press.
Oh, Harvard,
that was
of course,
actually,
yes.
That was, you know, when you think of the small amount of time, relatively speaking, I spent on Love Story and the years I spent researching Roman Laughter, which was. An inquiry, an examination of how the Roman character is reflected in what they laugh at. And of course, the footnotes, the research just took just years and years and years and years and years. And I think, of course, Roman Laughter is the most important thing I've ever done and may ever do.
Well, did your research for the Comedy of Plautus help you in Love Story?
No.
I mean, as far as sensing what comedy is all about, because there are a lot of very funny things in Love Story.
Oh, that, yes. That, absolutely, yes. I mean, in terms of gauging sense of humor and in fact, teaching at Yale, as I do a course in the history of comedy, I'm well aware. I mean, I sometimes go over my own... When I'm hung up on a creative writing project, I go and I look at my own lecture notes and I say, hey, what did the professor have to say about laughter? And sometimes they work. I mean, you know, there's no credibility gap between myself and myself, I think, at times.
How many classes do you teach? How many courses?
Up till now, it's been three courses a term, and now, happily, thank you, Professor Perry, my chairman, two, an undergraduate course and a graduate course.
And what are they in?
This coming term, it will be the Latin Elegiac Poets. That's both a graduate and an undergraduate course, Latin 143 for those at Yale interested, in Ovid, Tibullus, and Propertius, which is basically the Augustan poets.
And Love Story is required reading in all of your classes, I'm sure. We've been talking to Eric Segal, author of Love Story, which is the number one bestseller, I believe, on the fiction list at the moment. It's published by Harper and Row. It concerns, of course, a doomed love affair, but it's beautifully done, and you won't find it too unhappy, I'm sure. And Dr. Segal, you have you got doctors in classics, or what?
In comparative literature. Good old Harvard.
Dr. Segal is now at Yale, but was formerly at Harvard. And as I say, I recommend Love Story most highly. It has caused most of the people who finished it, I think, to cry. And see if you can break that record or add to it. I'm Bob Cromie from the Chicago Tribune. Thank you very much for watching us, and I trust that you watch us again next week. And Eric, I'm delighted that you came, and congratulations on this. When does the movie come out, by the way?
BookBeat has been made possible by a grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. This program distributed by Educational Television Stations Program Service. Nationwide distribution of the preceding program is a service of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.